Hello and welcome to another episode of Travelosophy. I'm your host, Jay Jackson, and now let's talk Disneyland! The fact that China has become the site of the newest Disneyland is proof of what a long way it's come. This would have been unthinkable 40 years ago. At the grand opening, I was amongst the first group of people in the park, which, as you could imagine, was incredibly exciting. However, there was little fanfare. All that happened was they opened the gates, everyone rushed in, all the cast and characters were alongside Main Street waving and cheering. Meanwhile, all guests just rushed straight for the rides. On the grand opening day, because I was amongst the first in the park, I managed to get straight on most rides until I was about 3/4 of the way around the park, which was fantastic because later, when it got more crowded, I was then able to take time out for the shows. Shanghai Disneyland has a lot of shows, including Tarzan, Frozen, Lilo and Stitch, The Lion King, and Pirates of the Caribbean. Which works well because they each can fit a couple of hundred people at a time, and it's air-conditioned. However, they're all in Chinese, but you can still figure out what is going on with the theatrics. I particularly like the Tarzan show, as it's full of acrobatics, and the Pirates of the Caribbean show has a 20-minute intro all in Mandarin, but the actual show in the theatre has some really impressive special effects, including a tornado. As the park was newly open, they weren't utilising the single rider queue so much, but I'm sure eventually they'll start to use this. For purists, you'll be disappointed to know there's no Space Mountain or It's a Small World. However, the Disney plan these days seems to be adding in new rides and experiences each year to encourage repeat visitors, and with the recent launch of Hyperspace Mountain, who knows what will eventually find its way to Shanghai Disney. Already since the grand opening, they have added Toy Story Land, which was previously only in Hong Kong. And adjacent to the park is a full-size Broadway theatre showing full-length musicals, albeit again in Mandarin. For the grand opening, they had the full Broadway production of The Lion King, and soon they'll be putting on Beauty and the Beast. If you want to attend these shows, though, it is a separate ticket to Disneyland, so just be aware of that. But Shanghai Disneyland is different to other parks, and that's okay, because it offers a totally unique experience that you won't find elsewhere, as long as you know going in that you're getting a Chinese Disney experience. However, what Shanghai Disney does is have beefed up versions of Pirates of the Caribbean, which utilises 4D cinema and gives you the sense of being underwater, the Tron ride, which makes Space Mountain feel like one of those kiddie coasters. It goes so fast, I honestly thought we're about to travel through time. Just when you think it won't go any faster, it does. There are some rides you also have to put all your loose belongings in a free locker, so just make sure you do that before queuing up. Other new ride experiences include the Voyage to the Crystal Grotto, which is basically a slow, relaxing cruise which goes past fountains and statues of Disney characters. There's also the Jetpacks ride, which is something like a more adult version of the Dumbo ride, and Roaring Rapids, which is great if you can get on it, but it was broken down for about half the time that I was there. The other thing that's different about Shanghai Disney is there's a lot of walkthrough experiences, which aim to shuffle a lot of people through without queuing, so even if you don't want to wait for a ride, you can still do something. Like the Alice in Wonderland maze, which is a walkthrough rose garden with statues, the Once Upon a Time adventure, which is in the castle, and you walk through to see an interactive magical display. I didn't actually do this one, because each time I passed it, I was rushing to get to an actual ride. There's also the Marvel Universe, which includes a mini Avengers movie, and you can also see all the variations of the Iron Man suit. It's kind of similar to Star Wars Bay, where you can have your photo taken with characters. But the awesome thing here is there's a Spider-Man comic drawing class, and you can walk away with a drawing, which is a really cool souvenir. And of course, there's a gift shop, where you can purchase all your Marvel merchandise, some of which is only found here. Other uniquely Shanghai attractions include Camp Discovery, which is a high ropes course where you're strapped into a harness and climb along rickety swinging logs over a raging torrent of water. And Explorer Canoes, which is basically a canoe you paddle around a lake. Sounds more like exercise than a ride to me. You'll need to wear shoes for the high ropes adventure, which I missed out on because the day I'd planned to do it, I was wearing thongs or flip-flops or jandals, whatever you want to call it. Basically not shoes. There's plenty of traditional rides like Peter Pan's Flight, Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, Fantasia Carousel, and Dumbo the Flying Elephant. So there are still some traditional rides. The longest I queued up for any ride at Shanghai Disney was probably about 3 hours for the Soaring Over the Horizon ride, which is like Soaring Over California, but instead covers global attractions like Antarctica, Mount Everest, and of course the Great Wall, which everyone cheers and claps for. I think they've since put that into California, so it'll probably make its way around to other parks as well. Although any ride wait times seem to fly by, as most young Chinese people, like uni student age, have been studying English, but rarely get an opportunity to practice it. So every time I was in a queue, I was bombarded by locals wanting to both practice their English and learn about life in other countries. It was fascinating learning about life in China, and make sure you have a Weibo or WeChat set up on your phone. It's just an app you can download, as it's the main way Chinese can keep in touch. One of the highlights for any Disney trip is of course the food. And I had a checklist of Mickey-shaped treats to tick off, including Mickey Mouse-shaped ice cream, pork buns, pizza, and muffins. Some food is only available from one outlet, so you may have to peruse your map and plan your day to try them all. The only churros stand is near Sleeping Beauty's castle, but I became totally addicted to the caramel popcorn. Funny story. I was walking along, munching away on my bucket of caramel popcorn, and this tall African-American fellow walked up and he said, "Oh man, that looks good." So I was like, "Would you like to try some?" And he was like, "Sure, why not?" He grabbed a handful, and it was only as he strode off I noticed a bunch of Chinese teenagers chasing after him with cell phones in hand, taking videos and photos, that I realized, I think he was a famous basketballer. I later saw him on the VIP balcony as part of the exclusive Disney club that only rich and famous people get invited to. But I still don't know who he was. So I shared my popcorn with someone famous, but don't know who. I spent 3 days at Shanghai Disney, so the grand opening plus two more. And day two and three were far more crowded than opening day. But as I had a 2 day pass, I was able to skip the entry queues and head straight in because my ticket was already validated, which is something small to remember. So, lesson learnt from Shanghai Disney. Make sure you arrive early, head straight for the rides, don't get distracted by shops or shows, as you can always visit them later in the day. So, lesson learnt from Shanghai Disney. Arrive early, head straight for the rides, and don't get distracted by shops or shows, as you can visit them later in the day, when there's big queues on rides or when you need a break from running around. There's also free Wi-Fi hotspots and a designated Shanghai Disney app, which shows you real-time wait times for the rides, so you can check the wait time before trudging over to the other side of the park. Shanghai Disneyland is much bigger than any other, so make sure you wear comfy shoes because you'll be walking a lot. And whilst it's annoying to carry a bag, it can be really handy to have water and snacks to get you through long wait times and queues. There are water fountains throughout the park, and although Shanghai tap water isn't safe to drink, the drinking water in the fountains at Disneyland is filtered water, and so it's perfectly fine. Make sure you utilize your fast passes for the big rides like Tron or Pirates of the Caribbean. Also be aware that when I visited Shanghai Disney, all fast passes were gone by 8:30, so make sure you get there early to ensure you get a fast pass. It's a good idea to arrive early for the shows because they can often fill up before the doors have even opened, especially the Frozen one. Likewise, take note when shows are likely to finish because rides near the shows will always be more crowded straight after a show is finished. But you can also use this to your advantage and place yourself closest to a ride, for example during the parade, and head straight to the ride as soon as the parade is finished. Also, if the person you ask at any attraction doesn't speak English, they will always know and find someone who can, which I was really impressed with because at no time was communication an issue throughout Shanghai Disneyland. In my blog post about traveling China independently, you'll find a link to a review I wrote about Shanghai Disneyland, which goes into far more detail about all the rides, the shows, and the food. Overall, make sure you avoid any public or school holidays. Plan to visit at least over 2 or 3 days if you have the time so you can see as much as possible. A single day is just not enough for Shanghai Disney. The Disney hotels were fully booked when I visited, but about 10 minutes away at Kangxing Highway Metro Station, there's a bunch of hotels like Novotel that are near the subway that take you directly to Shanghai Disneyland. Otherwise, it's a decent 40 to 60 minute subway ride from downtown Shanghai to Disneyland, and most likely will require multiple subway changes. Most importantly is to remember that Shanghai Disneyland is a Chinese Disney experience, so it is different to American theme parks, and that's okay. However, if you're traveling to Shanghai Disneyland, just over 2 hour flight time away is Hong Kong Disneyland, which is often overlooked as it's the smallest of the parks. But unlike Tokyo or Shanghai, all rides and experiences are in English. However, the best part is Hong Kong has the shortest wait times. and it operates single rider queues for a lot of them. So for most rides, I waited no more than 10 minutes. Often I walked straight on. Although I expect as more foreigners visit Shanghai Disney, then Hong Kong Disneyland will become slightly more crowded. They are also one of the first parks to have the Toy Story World, which include Slinky's Coaster, Toy Soldier's Parachute Drop, which is kind of a more child-friendly version of those big drop rides, and it offers a great view over the park. Plus, of course, there was a whole bunch of photo opportunities in Toy Story World, and plenty of cool merchandise in the shop. At Sleeping Beauty's castle at Hong Kong Disney is amongst the smallest. It also means it's the cutest. They do have It's a Small World and the Mad Hatter teacups, along with traditional experiences like the Jungle River Cruise. Although Disney seems to be on a mission to get rid of old rides and replace them with new ones, as the day before I arrived in Hong Kong, they closed Space Mountain. But it's since been replaced with Hyperspace Mountain. Hong Kong Disney is small enough to knock off in half a day, but big enough you can easily fill your day if you decide to stick it out till the evening parade and fireworks, which is always spectacular. Although the castle is currently undergoing renovation, so check on the Disney website when the evening fireworks will start again. But you'll fit in so many rides, it's easy to fill in a full day at Hong Kong Disneyland. If you're there in typhoon season, some of the outdoor rides may be temporarily closed if there's a typhoon warning. But usually that means the park is less crowded, and often they'll open them again later in the day. So, lesson learnt from Hong Kong Disney. If you see something you like in a shop, buy it, because it won't appear in other Disney stores. I saw some really cute bowls at Hong Kong Disney, but thought, oh, you know what? Surely they'll have that at Shanghai, which is at the end of my trip. Needless to say, they didn't, and I missed out. Likewise, some souvenirs are only found at shops in that specific land. So whilst you may not want to carry it around all day, there's lockers you can put stuff in. And in some cases, it may be better to have that souvenir you love rather than racing around the park at the end of the day looking for it and not finding it. You can also take advantage of Package Express, where they keep your shopping for you to collect on the way out. So, next up, as promised, I have three very special guests. Emily, who just got back from Tokyo Disneyland and it was her very first Disney experience. Chevy, a mega Disney fan with her own YouTube channel. And Faith, who spent a year working at Disney World, Florida. Today I'm here with Emily. Welcome, Emily.
Hi.
Emily recently got back from a trip to Japan and where she experienced her very first Disney experience. Being a first-time visitor to Disneyland, how long was it after entering the gate before you started crying?
We didn't even make it to the gate. We literally got the train there, and then we got off the train, and we saw one sign that said Disneyland, and we both started crying. We took a picture of ourselves in front of it, and now both of our eyes are closed because we're crying.
Awesome. That's one thing that nobody ever mentions, but everyone does.
Yeah.
What were the top three experiences, would you say, from your first trip to Tokyo Disneyland?
Do you know what I really liked? All the staff were actually so friendly and they waved to you constantly.
Yeah.
Like there was one of the rides were like on the top of a mountain and you'd be walking around the bottom of the mountain and the lady's like leaning over the mountain waving to you and it's like you're not even there with her but everyone's constantly waving. That's my only enjoyable experience.
What was your favourite ride?
At Disneyland?
Was it one of the classics?
I can't even remember them.
The teacups. It's been a long time since I've been to
Disneyland. Oh, my favourite ride was Pooh's Honey Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone was just so happy. And, like, in the, I don't know what you call it, Heffalumps and Woozles room thing, and everyone's just spinning around. It was just so happy.
It's a cool ride.
Yeah.
Was it in English or Japanese?
Everything was in Japanese. Every single show was in Japanese. So, like, we'd walk up to a show. It was, like, a story time with Stitch or something like that. And the staff were like, Japanese only, Japanese only. And we're like, yeah, we're going in. Like, are you going to stop us? And they're like, go on. And we're just sitting there like, we have no idea what is going on.
The Stitch one, I saw that in Shanghai. In Chinese.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Everyone was laughing.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the other shows have enough kind of theatrics that you can still
feel. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know the general idea of what Ariel's singing about. Yeah. But, like, when they're talking to the audience and stuff like that, it's like, I'm out. Don't look at me.
How did going to Disneyland change your life?
Now I want to go to the mall. That's like the only thing. All my holidays will now probably be planned around going to a Disney.
Yeah. Did you go to both Disneyland and DisneySea?
Yeah.
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 Which did you prefer out of the two?
Disneyland.
Really?
Because it was bigger.
Yeah.
When we went to DisneySea, two of the main attractions were closed that day.
Yeah.
So Journey to the Center of the Earth and Tower of Terror was closed.
Yeah.
So that was kind of like a downer.
Yeah. What was your favorite souvenir you purchased?
We only purchased ears. We were on the biggest budget. Yeah, we didn't buy anything else.
Not even like a little fluffy mini or...
No.
Just ears.
Just ears.
I suppose that's all you need, really.
Yeah. That was like one of our first things we wanted to do when we got in the gate. We're like, we need to fit in. Everyone is wearing matching clothes. Like, even if it's not Disney themed, everyone's in matching shoes, yeah. Pants, shirt. Like, if the whole family's wearing matching outfits. And we're like, we're not matching. So we bought matching ears.
Nice. That was big in everywhere you go in China.
Mm.
Girlfriends would make their boyfriends
wear matching
clothes. And you could tell they so weren't into it.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you know, it'd be quite a girly show or whatever. And the guy, this big, you know, Chinese guy
is sitting
next to her like, my girlfriend's making me wear this big matching. What was your favourite foodie experience at Disneyland?
We didn't really eat much there apart from... Churros.
How many churros did you have?
A couple. Only a couple. And that was at DisneySea because we had some time to kill before the show. So we just ate churros.
Actually, it was at Tokyo Disneyland. I was there with some friends of mine who were also teaching English over in Japan.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, how, or what the purpose of this was, but we decided we would eat our height. In churros.
Oh my god.
Because each churros is roughly a foot.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's easy. I just have to eat six. And after like the fourth one, I couldn't. And I was like almost gagging because it was honey and lemon flavor.
Oh no.
It was gross.
They didn't have any of those there.
And it was probably a good 10 years before I could eat a churros again.
I can imagine.
I couldn't face it. What words of wisdom would you impart on future first timers to Disneyland?
Get there early. Get there like when it opens or before it opens because everyone was sitting there on these little mats lining up at the gates.
They have mats?
Yeah, you can buy them there. Like they're just like...
little stools as well?
Yeah, they're just without a collapsible stool. Like they're ready to go. Like, we were the awkward ones standing up in the line. Everyone's sitting down. But yeah, we got there really early. And when we went to Disneyland, the gates opened at 8, but the rides didn't open till 8:30.
Yeah.
We didn't leave till it closed.
Yeah.
So, that was a full day. We didn't stop all day.
Yeah.
And probably like another thing, the single rider lines are amazing. Yeah. Like even though we were together, so when we were at DisneySea, Indiana Jones, the line was like 50, 60 minutes long. But then like in the sheet, it said single riders. So we went and spoke to one of the cast members. And they were like, oh, yeah, just go in the fast pass lane. We're like, okay. So we went up through the fast pass lane and you had your own little secret passage around the rest of the line as well. And then you get to the fast pass part and the lady's like, we're single riders. And I'm like, okay, go around all the fast pass riders. And within 2 minutes of, like, walking through this line, you're just walking past everyone. You're at the front of the line. You're on the next ride, we're on at the same time on different carts, but then we meet at the end and it was just, we did that 4 times and I don't know why, but it was such a good ride and we would walk past the same people waiting to go on it once, like
and
several times.
Up on it.
They probably would because we were, you don't see many Caucasian tourists, like they're all from Japan,
that's
which I
the
was,
Japanese love Disney.
Yeah,
they're obsessed with
that. I was surprised by that, like not seeing many other international tourists.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were just like walking there. So they probably realized who we were kind of thing, walking past them several times. I'm like, this is awkward, but I'm going on the ride for a third time.
I remember Hong Kong Disney is awesome for that. They always have single rider queues. Shanghai, because when I was there, it only just opened.
Yeah.
So it was a bit random with the single riders, and it was different rides each day.
Yeah.
But first time around, it wasn't the same rides that they had. Single rider queues for. But I remember the first time I encountered that at Disney World in Florida.
Mm.
I was with my family and we saw it and we were like, I don't know you. I'm yeah.
now. It's so good.
So besides Disneyland, you also went to spent time in Tokyo?
A little bit, yeah.
What was the greatest, weirdest, can't miss thing to do in Tokyo?
The robot restaurant show.
Ah,
I've
seen that. Yeah.
Because before I went, I spoke to a few people and they're like, oh yeah, we were going to go to it, but it was too expensive because it works out to be like 80 or 90 Australian dollars,
yeah.
which is quite expensive.
Yeah. But what do you get for that?
You get to watch the show.
So then if you want food, you've got to pay on top.
Yeah, but it's not really a restaurant at all. So that's just false advertising. We ended up going to a 4 o'clock show. And it was amazing. Like that was like our first day in Tokyo as well. And the whole trip there, we're kind of like, doesn't even feel like we're going on holiday. And then we got to the show and the show started. And me and Rasheem, like, we just looked at each other and we started crying. And we were just sooks the whole trip, like, not in a bad way, but just because we were so excited about everything. And we're like, yeah, we're in Japan. Like, it was just so weird, but it was really, really good. I think it was worth it, 100%. So everyone that hasn't done it because it's too expensive have missed out.
And what happens in it?
It's just people on these giant robots dancing around a stage. Like, it's within, like, 10 centimeters of your chair. Like, it's so close to your face. And they have, like, different sets, like, different themes. Like, they had a Ninja Turtle robot and, I don't know, just, like, different, like, fairies and dragons and big dancing robots. I think there was a Star Wars-themed thing in there. I don't really know. But, yeah, it was really good. And they had, like, an intermission. And then on these big screens in front of you, like, a number popped up. And they're like, congratulations. I was like, that's my chair number. What did I win?
Like soap powder or something?
I had no idea what was going on because everyone was pointing to me. And I was like, yes. And then they walked out with this like big golden bucket of popcorn. So I won free popcorn.
Awesome. From your trip to Japan, what would you do differently next time?
I think maybe learn more of the language. We learnt two sayings while over there. Excuse me. And thank you. And it was tricky because there's a lot of people that didn't know what we're on about. Like we didn't even have a guide with us to kind of point things out or like have a pen to like write things down. We were hopeless.
Did you have a translation app?
No. We didn't even get any pocket Wi-Fis. So I probably maybe suggest getting a pocket Wi-Fi because we didn't have that.
But was there not free internet?
In some places.
Yeah.
But a lot of the places that we went to, no.
Did they have free internet at Tokyo Disneyland?
I don't think we sat still long enough to check.
Yeah. Because that was at Shanghai. They had free Wi-Fi in certain areas.
Yeah.
And you could, on the app, check what the wait times were on rides. So you didn't have to walk across the whole park.
Yeah, Disney Sea actually, they had a board at the front of the park with all the rides and all the wait times, which was good. So you didn't have to run around.
Where's next on your hit list?
Florida!
Disney World!
Yeah, the biggest one.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
That's next. 2025.
Emily, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Jay.
And next up, we have Chevy.
Have you always been a Disney fanatic?
Yes. Ever since I was a kid, I've always been a Disney fanatic. My dad wanted to be an animator, so I was raised with Disney in my household. My great nans were obsessed with Disney. My nan was. And my auntie was as well. So I really couldn't escape.
So it really runs through the whole family.
Really, really does. We're a Disney family.
When and where was your first visit to Disneyland?
So I first went to Disneyland Paris when I was 7 and a half with my great nan and my uncle, who's only 5 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
I went the first year that Space Mountain was open at Disneyland Paris, which was like, it had a phenomenal marketing. I remember as a kid, that was like the most exciting advert that would come on the TV. And it was the most magical experience apart from getting trapped on Small World, which felt like hours, which was probably only 5 minutes.
Oh my God.
But my nan was living for it. And now, my great nan has passed away when I was 14. But every time I go to a Disney park, I will go and sit on Small World just for her. Because that was her favorite ride. So for me, that is like a super important memory.
And it's, yeah, it's one of those classics. When I was in Shanghai Disney, they didn't have it. And it was really weird.
Oh, God, like, I can't imagine that.
Yeah, Shanghai Disney is a totally different experience. And it was, you know, because it was brand new, there was a lot of new rides. And, of course, they'll add rides in years to come, so to keep people coming back. But, yeah, on opening day, there was no – it's a Small World.
Oh, that's crazy. I can't imagine a Disney park without Small World.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for me, that's, like, one of the most iconic rides. I'm a massive fan of Mary Blair. So, for me, even though I don't like the ride, I appreciate the art style and the history behind it.
Yeah. How many Disney parks have you been to, and which one is your favourite?
Oh, I've done Disney World and Disneyland Paris. We have got plans to do Tokyo Disney, especially now that Tim Tracker's been. My other half is very much sold now after watching his videos that have been coming out this week. So that's our big plan. But it's mostly I've done all the Disney World parks apart from Blizzard Beach. Every time I've gone, it's been closed.
Oh, really?
If you go in October to November period, it's never open. So, and I've only ever done it in between October and November. So it's always closed. So next year I'm planning to go in September. So I can actually go to Blizzard Beach and actually see it and try it.
Yeah.
Scared about doing Summit Plummet.
Yeah.
But my favourite park is Animal Kingdom, and it's beautiful.
And what is it about Animal Kingdom that stands out?
It's just the landscape. It is, you walk into it and you're in like a whole different world there. And it doesn't feel fake or anything like that. And the food choices, I am a sucker for food. And it has one of my favourite restaurants, which is Yak and Yeti, and they have the counter service and the sit-down meal, both equally as good as each other. And the addition of Pandora. I didn't want to be that person that believed in the hype, but Pandora, I was sold on that. And really? No photo or video can capture it.
It wasn't built when I visited Disney World, I haven't seen it anywhere else.
I can't explain it. It's a totally different sensation when you walk through it. It blew my mind. It was first time I've ever been completely astonished, and I came off of Flights of Passage crying, and not crying because it was scary, but because it was the most beautiful and captivating thing I've ever seen.
Wow.
And it's worth queuing an hour for. That's the only ride I would queue an hour happily for.
What advice would you give someone who's thinking about going to a Disney park?
Oh, my advice, research before you go. The amount of times that I deal with friends and family that are not a part of like the Disney Twitter community or anything like that, they go and think that you can just bomb and do everything, especially at Disney World. And it's, you've got to prepare. If you're doing Disney World, Disneyland Paris, there is only some minor things that you need to plan, like restaurant reservations, like chef at the Ratatouille restaurant.
Yep.
Cannot think of what it's called, but that's probably the only thing you really need to super plan for Disneyland Paris. But Disney World, it is a whole different world. Like, you need to be booking your dining reservations 180 days in advance, getting your fast passes. It is a lot more to planning. You don't have to, but if you want the full experience, if you want certain reservations, you've got to do it. Though, one of my handy tips is keep checking on the day, because people cancel reservations on the day. I mean, I've got Be Our Guest reservations on the day. Which people will tell you that's not possible, and I've managed to. I've seen Ohana's, I've seen California Grill come up on the day for reservations. Yeah. So there are chances, but I just don't want to ever tell someone you're guaranteed.
Yeah.
And also to have fun and have breaks. That's also the other thing, that it's fine to have a break at the pool, or it's fine to just sit down, or it's fine to have a nap on Carousel of Progress. That's also my handy tip. Have a nice little snooze on Carousel of Progress, because that is a nice nap place.
that will
sing to you for half an hour.
That was one of the things that was quite different about Shanghai Disney, was there's lots of shows, and I think there was like 4 shows from memory.
Ooh.
There was a Tarzan, a Frozen, a Lion King, and something else. I can't remember. But it was,
Captain Jack, isn't there?
Yes, it is.
That is the one I know of. I've seen the Captain Jack one because I've heard loads of people talk about that and I've had a quick look at that.
So those in itself was almost, especially I was there in summer, so it was really hot as well. And it was really nice to sit down in air conditioning and just chill out for, you know, half an hour, 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, that's the important thing, which I think people don't ever plan into things. And also, yeah, like you said, shows are a great place to just sit down and relax.
Yeah.
You've got Disneyland Paris, you've got Mickey and the Magician, which I've not watched a show because it's something I super want to see just for a first time being there. But that could be something you can sit and relax, especially if you've got small children as well. I think that's also important. I'm not someone that has a child, but if I did, I would be planning to do things like that. My other handy tip as well is if you're wanting to do Food and Wine Festival at Epcot, try and leave it till the evening. It can be a bit more busier, but you're not going to be risking getting heat stroke and things like that if it's a really super hot day and you'll be actually wanting to eat because it's a little bit cooler as well.
Yeah.
So, my handy tip for Epcot. Also, I think Epcot looks prettier at night. I don't know why. I just think it's a lot nicer at nighttime. It takes on a whole new life.
Make it look nice. And the fireworks.
Yeah, and you've got illuminations and you can watch that from anywhere. The best place is actually to watch it at Katsura Grill in Epcot.
Yeah.
Because that's a quick service meal. You can literally just grab a little bento box and just watch from there.
Which no one seems to do. And I did that when I was by myself about twice. I watched illuminations from there and that's my favorite spot.
Yeah.
To watch it.
Awesome. Is there a particular Disney character that you affiliate with?
Oh, this is like, I'm trying to think. It would probably be a mixture of Aladdin and Rapunzel. I choose Aladdin because he gave up his friend Genie to make sure he had the freedom and things like that. I know obviously he did use wishes and lied, but it was the fact of that he would rather have his friend, that he, you know, he treated him with a friend and like he never forgot about Abu as well.
Yeah.
Throughout his journeys. And Rapunzel, she wanted to live her dream and she got to live her dream. And she found another dream along the way. And I think that's amazing.
Now, I understand you're from near Bristol.
Yep.
If a tourist or someone from overseas was visiting Bristol, what would you recommend they do? Something that only a local would know.
So Bristol, there's so much places to go. It is quite a arty vibe to it. You can do the graffiti tours where you can see Banksy's artwork.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think they start from like £10, but to be honest, you can download a map for free. we also have every summer the Aardman Animation Trail, which is where you get to see Wallace or Gromit statues all around the whole city centre and you have to go and find them. And there's usually about 50. But the other things as well is there's so many good food places. My favourite one, there's a gyoza place that's only open Monday to Friday between 12 and 3 o'clock. And they make fresh made gyozas from scratch and they do whatever fillings, whatever sauces you want. That's really super good. Also, we've got an amazing cinema, which it sounds really silly, but it's an amazing experience.
No, not at all.
There's a place called Director's Hall and you sit in it and it's like sitting in a massive armchair. You can lean back, you can have cocktails, hot food brought to you. It's like being in an American cinema. That's the closest I can explain it. So it feels really nice. And also you get your drink and your popcorn included in the price and it actually works out
that's cheaper
than... cheaper than buying a normal ticket and then buying your popcorn on top. But yeah, you can travel to Wales really easily as well.
Yeah. From your travels, whether it's been Disney or somewhere else, has there been something happened that kind of changed how you travelled in future?
I would say...
I guess something that had an impact on you for future travels.
Yeah. I think my one that lasted for me was my last camping holiday, which was in France. It was in Lake Annecy, which is kind of the center of in the central part of France. and you were surrounded by mountains and there's a beautiful lake. And the campsite was beautiful, but it turns out it was like a 7-mile walk to the town from there, which was really terrible when you're in need of food. But the thing that got to me, the one thing that put me off of coming, put me off of camping was, I loved that, but one landed on our tent. And it repeatedly happened every single night. A bat would land on our tent and go mental. So it really put me off camping because, like, you'd be nicely peaceful, like getting to sleep, and then you'd just hear this noise, and you'd light your torch up, and you'd just see this bat flapping on top of your tent, and you're like, okay, this is not what I was expecting. They kind of put me off of camping. Other situations where it's obviously rain as well, which puts any happy camper off of anything. So yeah, that kind of made me go, I don't feel like camping's for me. I like being with nature, maybe not that much with nature.
But there's always glamping.
Always glamping, which I've never tried, but that's something I'd like to try and hopefully not experience bat attacks.
There's a big push in Australia and New Zealand for tiny houses in remote locations.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And I actually stayed in one recently. And so it's got all the comforts of home. So you've got shower, you know, kitchen. There's a proper bed, obviously, and air conditioning and lights. Everything's run by solar panels. But it's right in the middle of nature. So it's kind of, you're right there, but you still have comforts.
Well, that's really good. Yeah. I've seen like videos on, you know, where you get those little videos on Facebook that are like, check this out, like the dodo videos. I think I've seen them like quite a few times, but they do look really cool. I really want to try one of the little wood. There's like a little wooden hut in.
Yeah.
A part of North America where it's like it's one of those tiny ones, but there's the experience of being able to see like bears and things like that, and that looks really
awesome. What destination that you've been to has the fondest memories for you?
I would probably say it's going to be Disney World. Going to Disney World is probably going to have the fondest memories,
of course.
Because the first time I went, the trip didn't go as planned. I went with a friend who really wasn't into it. So I ended up doing a lot of it all by myself, which actually really glad I had that experience because I got to see like the Osborne family light show and things like that. But the second time I went.
And of course, the single rider queue.
Oh, single rider queue. Yes. I got to the point where the people on Everest knew who I was. And the same with Splash Mountain, because I kept getting fast passes for Splash Mountain. And it got to the point where they just said, do you want to stay on? And I was like, yes, I do. Cause I went around like 6 times, but that was a great experience. I actually felt like having a solo trip was a really good boost for me because I've always been a fussy eater. And actually that broke me being not being a fussy eater anymore because I was like, I can try food and no one can judge me. So I literally was trying everything.
Awesome.
But the second experience was better because I took my boyfriend who had never been, and I came with 2 of my friends, and seeing his face when he walked through Magic Kingdom and his first ride was the People Mover in Magic Kingdom, and that just changed his life. It's now his favorite ride. But it's just those silly little happy memories where like you can still see the faces of people. Like my friend Hayley, I still can see and visualize when she met Baymat and her little face just dropped and it was like the cutest thing. And like my friend Scarlett, she lost her phone, so we bought her a Duffy Bear to keep her company and to say like, oh, I'm sorry, like you lost your phone. And this Duffy Bear, and she got a Shelley May. They went on a massive adventure. She bought them costumes. They went on all the rides. And, you know, I think those are great experiences. And like, those are things that you're going to treasure because you won't always remember everything, but you can remember those certain little moments, which are beautiful.
Yeah, of course.
It's the same as my Disneyland Paris trip. I was only 7 the first time I went, but it's just like, I still can visualize my great nan's little face when she was on Small World. And like, she was like, I see her eyes welling up.
And like, I think that is beautiful. And also just terrifying my 13-year-old uncle by going on Dumbo and discovered he didn't like heights, which was the best thing ever when you're 7 years old.
It's Dumbo terrified so
your
high.
Old uncle. I know. I was like, he went on Space Mountain and Indiana Jones roller coaster, and yet he couldn't handle Dumbo. That was the craziest thing.
Awesome. And what's something that you've learned from travel?
One thing I've learned from travel is, one, take probiotics wherever you go. and that, which sounds really silly, but I suffer from lactose intolerance. So I do like pizza and things like that. So I'd always say take probiotics, because if you're even just the slightest bit of water change, and I even find that in the UK, I can go to Cornwall, which is a beautiful part of the UK. And I would say that is the best place to go in the UK, is just to go down that way.
Yeah.
But the water change can affect your stomach and things like that. And the probiotics just help. And also just taking the time to enjoy things. Obviously, if you're going to a theme park, you want to do all the rides, but you've just got to be realistic to yourself and prioritize what it is you want to do. You're never going to be able to do everything. I've been to Disney World 3 years in a row, I've not done everything.
Really?
And that's, you can't do everything. You know, and I've done two lots of free trips for 2 weeks, and you can't. There is so much to do. And that's the same as traveling. When I've traveled around France, and I really wanted to go and do more of the Normandy beaches and things like that, but I ended up getting, you know, falling in love with Brittany, which is basically the Cornwall equivalent of France, because it's so beautiful. And there's Mont Saint-Michel, which if you get a chance to, I'd always, always say to go to. But yeah, it's just taking the time and understanding you can't do everything in one go. And there's nothing stopping you to say you can't do it in the future.
My mum always said, always leave something to go back to.
Yeah, because otherwise, if you do everything, what are you going to do the next time if you say you want to go to there? I mean, even Disneyland Paris, I think there's probably some things, I've done it multiple times. I think there's only I haven't done the Ratatouille ride, and I haven't done Mickey and the Magician, because I haven't been back since.
Yeah.
But that's the reason why I'm not going back, is I want to leave a little bit more room and to have more things to do, because I obliterated doing everything. I've done all the restaurants, I've done all the rides. Yeah. So I do feel like sometimes you just need to wait a little bit, so you can go back and enjoy it some more.
And where's next on your hit list?
So next on my hit list is going to be Disney World for next year. However, we are looking at potentially a little trip, maybe to Tokyo, if we can squeeze that in, because
you should definitely do it.
I've always wanted to do Tokyo. I used to be a massive anime nerd, or weeb. We refer to ourselves in the community. You know, I'm a massive fan of Sailor Moon, and just Japanese culture in general. I watch a lot of Japanese drama programs, and I studied art at uni, and it was very much influenced by Japanese artists. And so I'd love to just be able to go, not just for Tokyo Disney's just a bonus. I would just want, like,
don't forget you've got Disney Sea as well.
I know. I was showing my boyfriend the Tim Tracker video of Disney Sea, explained to him that's the dream park.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you realize though, if you go to Tokyo, it's only a short 3-hour flight to go to Shanghai. And then from Shanghai, it's only another hour and a half to get to Hong Kong.
Yeah, that's the reason why we're like, oh, we would love to do a short trip to Tokyo. But then we just we did the same thing. We're like, oh, actually, we could hit all three parks. So we may just save that as our next big trip. Also, if we leave it a little bit longer, the Beauty and the Beast themed area will be in Tokyo Disney. And so we're with the Baymax ride, which I'm sold by because it's Baymax. I think anyone that's seen Big Hero 6 would be sold by that.
Of course. But, they've been doing a lot of adding new rides recently, like just pumping them out every couple of months.
Yeah, it's getting I feel like since Disney seems to have got this social media following, they're kind of now finally listening and being like, oh, we actually need to start building new rides.
Yeah.
It's like Disneyland Paris, so, so happy that the Disney company have taken that over, and they're going to be rejuvenating that place, because it really, really needs the love. It's a beautiful park. If you're massively into Disney and Disney Imagineering, Disneyland Park was designed mostly by Tony Baxter, who's a phenomenal Imagineer. I am a bit of a Joe Rohde fangirl, who's the guy that's behind Animal Kingdom, henceforth why I really love that park. But it is beautiful. I mean, it's got one of the most picturesque castles, I believe, out of all the parks. So Shanghai's one looks amazing. What was that like?
It was phenomenal. It's the biggest out of all of them, and it's got huge walkway, and there's water in front of it, and that reflects. There's like a lake, and it's basically like the others, but bigger, so you can walk through it, and there's a shop down the bottom, and there was also a lot of Shanghai was aimed at trying to give experiences that didn't require queuing, so that people still felt like they were getting a Disney experience by, you know, walking through an experience or walking through like a, you know, a little garden or walking along a painted wall, things like that. So, and it's all obviously tailored to Chinese. So, but the biggest thing with Shanghai was, for me, was the Tron ride. I'd never seen that before.
Oh, that looks so beautiful. Yes, I have. I'm so in love with that ride, just aesthetically. That is a beautiful ride. I'm not even a fan of the movie Tron, but I really want to go on.
I haven't even seen the movie still.
You don't need
but
to.
The ride, no. It was like, so have you been on it?
No, because I've never been to Shanghai, but like, I've watched enough point of view videos to feel like I've been on it.
Basically, I know Space Mountain is different in different parks, but it goes fast and you're like, okay, yeah, this is cool. And then it goes faster and you're like, oh my God, wow. And then it still goes faster and you're like, oh my God.
Oh my God. That is crazy. Cause you can't, obviously with a point of view video, you can never really capture what actually really happens. You can see, but you can't experience what the adrenaline rush is. But no, it looks phenomenal. The seating is what it looks like is very much similar to what Flights of Passage is like as well, just to give you an idea.
Yeah.
So you're sat in that type of weird curved position, like you're on a motorbike.
Okay. It was a bit weird, but it was rather than have like things on your shoulders and around your stomach, the tightness was in your legs, which was actually easy to deal with.
Yeah. I found that
like from claustrophobia.
Yeah, it felt, and I felt completely, I don't know how similar it is, but the seating looks very similar. Flight of Passage, it actually looked like it was going to be really uncomfortable. Actually, it was super more comfortable, I think, than sat down.
Yeah.
I felt like you get more of the experience as well. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, I think, because, I mean, it was like being on a motorcycle.
Yeah, with Flight of Passage, you're riding a banshee, which, I don't know, it's really, like, from seeing the pictures like side by side of someone saying, oh, if you can handle Tron, you can handle Flights of Passage because it's the same type of seat. But yeah, it is a weird way, but it works.
Hong Kong, one of the best things about Hong Kong Disney is there's hardly any queues.
Yeah, and my friend went and said there was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the day I was there, there'd been a cyclone or typhoon warning. So a lot of the big rides were shut for a few hours, like in the middle of the day. So that put a lot of people off. But even, I mean, I stayed there till night. And even at night, you know, as a single rider, they had that running on most of the rides. And, yeah, there was, on average, no more than about 10 minutes wait. And most of them were, like, literally straight on. There was the, I can't remember what it's called, the roller coaster that's, like, through a mine.
Oh, and I know the one you mean. It was like Bear something. I can't think of what it's called.
And if you were like waiting with friends or whatever, it was 45 minutes. But the single rider queue there was literally no queue. You just went straight on. So all these people are waiting and I went six times in a row.
Oh my God.
And the staff were like, I guess that's okay. And then eventually people started to cotton on.
Yeah. And so they all started doing single rider.
Yeah.
That happened with me and with Everest. Everest's single rider is usually no more than 5-10 minutes. The worst single rider, though, is Aerosmith. And I will say this as a handy tip. Don't do the single rider if you aren't a single rider. because okay. That sometimes can take a lot longer.
Yeah.
I've queued for like, it said it was a 15-minute wait for Aerosmith, and I queued an hour in a single ride.
Oh, wow.
So to give you an idea, it's not always the quickest. And I was talking to cast members, and a lot of people said a lot of people for the Aerosmith one will go as a group in through the single rider and then go, try and get an individual, which is what blocks it up.
That's so annoying.
Yeah, so that one's a little bit frustrating. So I would say give or take that one, and talk with the cast members at the front and ask them how bad the single rider is before going in.
Yeah. One of the big things at Shanghai was people being at the front of the queue and then other people coming going, oh, my friend's at the front. My friend's at the front. I have to meet my friend. And like pushing through.
Oh, that would drive me insane.
Yeah. And especially when you're in a queue for like on... not on opening day, but on the second day, it was like 3-4 hour waits.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that is not cool. But that happens in Disneyland Paris, I find, a lot as well.
Yeah. But it's more Disneyland of a cultural thing.
Yeah.
And so the cast, I mean, the crew and cast members were all trained on, you know, trying to stop it happening. And if they did catch someone doing that, then, you know, they'd kick them out, which was good. But, you know, I still saw it happening more than often than...
Which was annoying. I've spoken with a friend that's done Shanghai, and they said they had to physically hold both sides of the bars.
Yeah.
When queuing, and they just wouldn't let people through. They are a big 6'4" guy, so he could be quite terrifying looking, to be fair. But he said like it was constant when he said, but I've experienced that loads with Disneyland Paris, because it's not just like English people or French people that goes a lot. It's all around Europe. And so some cultures around Europe, they don't have the same sort of queuing culture. Like the cast members made a joke when I was out there that like you can tell a British person instantly just by the way they queue and how they wait for things.
Yeah.
So that was hilarious.
Thank you so much for joining, Chevy.
Thank you for having me.
It's been lovely hearing all your hints and tips and interesting bits about your trip to various Disney parks.
Oh, perfect. Thank you ever so much. And I hope you have a nice, evening.
If you'd like to know more about Disneyland from Chevy, you can follow her on Twitter, which is @MagicAndMouse. Next up is my interview with Faith.
All right, so this morning I've got Faith. Thank you so much for joining the podcast.
You're more than welcome. Excited.
So you worked at Disney World. How on earth did you get a job at Disney World, and what was the interview experience like?
Well, I found out about the job through, at the time it was called Travel Careers and Training. It's now the New Zealand School of Tourism. I found out about the job through there. I wrote a letter saying why I wanted the job and why I thought I'd be good at it, basically my like skills and attributes. And they came back and said I had an interview. And then I was so excited. It was about a week until I had to go up to Auckland. And honestly, when I did get to the interview, I waited 8 hours.
Oh my God.
And I got in, and it lasted maybe 6 minutes. What? And they were just pretty concerned. They must have already wanted me. That's what I assumed. I was hoping so. But they were just really focusing on what sort of role to specifically slot me into, if it was going to be a lifeguard or food and beverage or retail. And I got an email about a week later saying I got the job, and I ended up doing 6 months in attractions and operations, and then 6 months working in merchandise.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And what was your typical workday like whilst working at Disney, and were you just in the one park or did you work in different parks?
I was fortunate enough to work in Magic Kingdom the entire time I was there.
Wow.
When I was working in the operations and attractions, I was there during the time Frozen, the movie, came out, and I worked in the park where you would meet the princesses, Anna and Elsa. So in the morning, I would have to line up with other cast members as thousands or hundreds of guests would walk running towards us to meet them. And then I would greet them. I would run the carousel. I ran a 3D movie, and I'd speak to a good 100 people at a time. I did crowd control. But at the end of the night, I also worked in the pyrotechnics fireworks display. It was just, again, crowd control, but one of my jobs was to stand in front of the castle and look over all these hundreds of people witnessing the fireworks, and it was like an amazing feeling. And then my best job...
Not a bad day at work.
Not a bad day at work at all, no. But my favourite job was I was one of the only people, so I could say this, but one of the only people to actually lock the gate of the castle at night, and it was the most amazing feeling being in that park at night completely empty, and it was still so magical at that time.
Wow, that's incredible. What was your fondest memory working at Disney?
I've got so many memories. One fond memory I have is actually quite a sad one, but I was running the carousel one night and a mother brought her, I think it was a three-year-old son, over. And he had completely aqua blue eyes because he was going blind. And it was completely dead that night. There was no one there. So I got to spend the time with him and walk him around the carousel. And he wanted to feel every single horse because he couldn't see them. And eventually she jumped on with him and took him for a ride. And when they jumped off, he reached out and he was like touching my face and saying thank you. And he was adorable. And it was just such a gorgeous moment. And that's what working at Disney and what it was about, was making magic for them, and he made magic for me that night.
Oh,
as cheesy as it sounds.
Wes, well, that's a cool story. What was the biggest challenge about working in the happiest place on earth?
That's a hard one, but I'd have to say you would see families walking around with t-shirts that they've all printed, and it's like our first time to Disney World, or I actually saw a family said our first and our last time to Disney World. And then sometimes I'll be working on what they call the fast pass line. And sometimes some people would be incredibly rude or take advantage of it because they knew how the system worked. And just to get that little bit of extra, get that extra magic out of us. And Disney would deliver and kind of reward this, I would view. And it was so unfair because you'd have these families, it's their first time and they didn't know how to take advantage of the system in that way. And, you know, I did feel quite bad for them.
What was the best and worst guest experience you had?
Yeah, I would definitely say that best experience was that mother and child on the carousel, yeah, that white. Yeah. But there was many days, like we, working at Disney, we were definitely given the power to make magic. I carried like a little notepad in my pocket that I get to give out free ice creams. And if I see a little girl, a little boy crying, got to write out, aww, this little thing and, you know, make their day by giving them a free ice cream or something. So
every cool
day, like, you know, you'd have some really cool guests that would really appreciate it. And yeah, it was awesome. Bad guests, there wasn't too many. Like, just like I've mentioned, some families that pushed too far. But I do remember this one time, and it was maybe my second week on the job. And it was a large group. And on their defense, they did not speak English, but they just did not, yeah, understand that I was at the fast pass lane. And they did need to go through standby, and they just pushed through and ended up pushing me to the ground and just beelined through. And I was, wow, in tears that night, but, you know, it happens.
Yeah. And what secrets go on behind the scenes that guests have no idea about without ruining Disneyland forever?
No, of course not. Well, there's a few. I did actually, a lot of people do know that there are tunnels underneath of Magic Kingdom, so I can speak of that, yeah, and that's not much of a secret, but they also might not know that the park itself is on a second story. The tunnels themselves are ground level completely, and the park was actually built above it.
Okay.
And another wee insight is we got a subway downstairs in the Mousketeer area, which is the cafe. So right underneath the castle, I'd be having my lunch eating Subway.
That's just bizarre.
Yeah.
As a former employee, what advice would you have for guests wanting to plan a trip to Disney World?
Disney is amazing. No matter what age you are, it is full of magic and it's incredible. And if you are going to go to Disney, you would have to go all out. You have to stay at a Disney resort. And saying that, you also need to rent a car because you are in this big Disney bubble and Disney World is absolutely enormous. It is massive. So if you want to get away from just the resort food, and you just want to go to Walmart or something. You really need a car to get you out there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And which country that you've traveled to so far did you feel most at home in, and what made it feel that way?
I would have to say Scotland. I'm currently in Scotland at the moment, and I've been here for the past 6 months altogether. And I would say it's a lot like home, a lot like New Zealand. Yeah. I guess if you add a few, like, decals or pahuta kawa trees, it would look exactly the same. But I don't know. I just do find it very, very much like home. So I feel very comfortable here, especially with the people.
Okay, cool. And what's the best and worst thing about living in another country that no one tells you beforehand?
I would say that the best thing is that you have a I'm trying to get the right word. Hold on.
No, that's fine. It's a tricky question, I realise.
Yeah, that's actually a really hard question. I've been thinking about that one all day. I even had to, like, ask a few friends what I was like.
Maybe I'll answer it what I think. Yeah. And then that might spark something from you. So for me, I mean, I've lived in London, I lived in Japan, I lived in New Zealand, even that was different for me. Mm. And for me, the best thing was, even though it was all different, I equally felt at home wherever I was. So it was kind of, it's kind of weird in the sense that I felt at home in Japan, I felt at home in New Zealand. So it kind of...
Yeah.
Like, even though it was completely different and, you know, I didn't have my family, I didn't have my friends, it was a new home. And I really like that because it just meant that now when I travel, even if it's just a holiday, I easily feel like I'm at home wherever I am, if that makes sense.
Yeah, completely.
Like, it's hard to describe that unless you've lived somewhere and just kind of gone about your daily business, and it's not always about going to the top sites or whatever. It's about just enjoying being somewhere else and, you know, doing things different, exploring new places.
And just being somewhere completely different in you.
Yeah, and just being somewhere and kind of, I know, it's a tricky question. For me, the worst thing is probably missing out on all the small things back home that people forget to tell you. You know, like when my sister was still in school and maybe she'd win an award or something. But probably the biggest one I had was I was in New Zealand and I was Skyping home and my mum was like, oh, by the way, Tanya had her baby. And I was like,
really?
What? No one told me that my cousin was pregnant. No one.
Oh, my God.
I was like, how could everyone forget or neglect to tell me? And it was like just nobody thought of it. And mum was like, really? Did I not tell you that? And I was like, no, I think I would remember that.
Yeah, definitely. That's so mean of them.
Yeah, but again, it was, you know, it wasn't necessarily intentional. It was just I wasn't there, so I just kind of, I guess, out of the loop.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I know, it's funny now.
I was thinking.
So for you, what's the best and worst?
The worst thing is that. The best and worst. I was thinking the worst thing is after like meeting so many different people and I feel so naive. I feel like us New Zealanders are so naive because most people can speak different languages and we just, unless we, you know, Māori as well, but everybody, I know most of my friends know at least 2 or 3 languages and I don't know, I feel like, and then I want to know more. I guess that's the best thing. Like being traveling, I've got a growth for more, a need for more knowledge. I want to, about history and about other cultures and, while travelling, I just want to know and learn more about where I am, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. No, I think you've answered it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Cool.
I hope so.
I mean, and, you know, I could ask you this that same question in 2 years' time and then 5 years' time, and I'm sure you'd have completely different response
A completely different response.
Because...
But I do agree what you said, that the best thing is... being somewhere completely different in you, but just feeling home and feeling happy and being there and embracing it. And feeling, I love those moments when you're just standing there and that, you know, reality hits. You're like, oh my God, I'm in Iceland. I'm standing right here, like right between the tectonic plates and this is happening to me right now. You know, when you have that moment, that's the best part of traveling.
Yeah. And what's the biggest lesson you've learned so far from travel?
I've learned a lot.
Have you got something specific?
Biggest lesson, The biggest lesson is that I guess I can make it on my own, or I...
That's a huge lesson, and people don't necessarily realise that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the lesson I've learned through travelling is that I can make it on my own, and I'm great. Okay. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. Like, totally.
An example would be, like, when something goes wrong, I have a cry and I panic at that point in time. But the best feeling is when I get over it and I've had that solution and I've worked it out and I'm okay. I'm so proud of myself that I got through that and I did that and I didn't need help. I didn't need anybody. Like, those are my biggest lessons. And it's like, all right, this is what happened, but I got out of it. I did well.
And absolutely. And then the next time you face something, you're like, oh, I can do this. I've done it before.
Exactly. It's the best thing about traveling alone is you make the decisions. You've got no one else to rely on. It's all on you, and it's just you go and you get to do whatever you want, and that's what's really cool about it.
Yeah. And where's the next place you plan on traveling to, and why?
I want to do Central Europe next. I've just been up to Iceland, Scandinavia, and did a bit of Poland. My goal is cover as much as I can at this point in time, and I don't have a specific country because there's something I have to see in every single one around Europe, so I have to do them all.
Well, thank you very much.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed myself.
All good.
You can find Faith on Instagram at Faith Isabella Davis. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Travelosophy with Jade Jackson. If you have comments, you can tweet me at jadekinsjackson. You can check out my travel photos on Instagram at jadekinsjackson. If you'd like to send me a message on Facebook, you can find me at Travelosophy Podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, please head to my website www.jadejackson.com.au and visit the Support the Podcast page. There's some really easy ways you can support the podcast. For example, if you buy books from the Book Depository or are yet to subscribe to Apple Music, then click on the advertised links on my website where you can get 3 months free trial of Apple Music. It won't cost you any extra going via my website, but they pay a small commission to me to help keep the podcast going. Alternatively, if you absolutely love what you hear and want even more of it, including exclusive content, then head to my Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/JadeJackson, where you can join the Travelosophy community and have access to personal and exclusive content like additional podcast episodes, ad-free blog posts, and MP3 recordings of my poetry, and also digital downloads of my photographs. Thank you so much for listening to Travelosophy with Jade Jackson. Bye-bye now.